Anonymous been in corners with burners on us. Coming right a minute. Burka duffel 100,000 in it. Hey nigga, roll up. Anyway, do say mint with lemonade. Feeling good like I'm dealing yay. Moving to the day. Time limit never. Could do this shit forever. Can't even put it in words how I'm in love with
yo. Slang and work on the curb. What's up, world? Welcome to the Cold World Podcast. Happy to be in here chatting with you all. Try to get y'all out of here in less than 30 minutes. We're going to see. Some of the topics we're going to talk about is my summer plans, which I'm going to share with y'all a little bit. Gotta, you know, spend some time talking about the greatest fighter to ever step in the ring, Mr. Muhammad Ali. And then just some writing stuff that I got coming up. It's a little different than what I've done before, so I'm going to talk a little bit about that, and then we're going to end on education and the newest controversy, I guess, depending on who you ask. But yeah, so let's hop right into it, man. Let me actually change that around and start this off by giving showing respect to the great Muhammad Ali. RIP, sir. Thank you for your service and just for you being you and being a proud black man in these streets and standing up for what you believed in and having them hands. None of this is possible without them hands. So appreciate you, man. And you fought some great battles. I've had the pleasure of going back and watching those. Yeah. So I know it rocked the nation. I'm happy that you got a chance to rest, man. And, you know, I've watched folks suffer and stay a little longer than they probably needed to stay, you know, for family or for friends or, you know, for those type of reasons. I've seen people suffer, so I'm glad that you are not suffering anymore. So yeah, we're gonna transition from that. I don't have a good transition to go to the next thing. Just want to definitely send prayers out to his family and just again say thank you for what you've meant to all of us. So sleep well, goat. And I got some feedback from some of my podcasts. We're like, what does it mean when you say these things? So I guess I need to annotate for people, for different audiences that ain't from where I'm from. The goat is just the greatest of all time. Do you get it? Are you okay? Cool. So the summer plans. I'm real gung ho on writing, right? And I write about education a lot, and I write about black folks a lot, and I wanted to, you know, I've been trying to get this book done for a while, and there's two that I've been kind of working on, and so, you know, I said I was going to, like, go on vacation to just write, to go to a new space and just try to crank out as much writing as I could, not too worried about, like the quality of it, just like getting these thoughts out of your head and like getting them down on paper. And so, you know, normally in this writing process, I don't know if a lot of folks know this, but I tend to go, I write in a bunch of different places. So, you know, I write in Starbucks and coffee shops and all, and on my balcony and all that stuff. But when I got to really dig deep, I go write, I go drive to like the shelter that I grew up in. It's the Salvation Army is in off of Clay Street in Oakland. It's not the Salvation Army no more. It's something else. It's like I think it's like a union headquarters or something like that. But I'll go sit out there and then I'll write like in my car, I'll jot the stuff down. And then I go to like the places where I grew up, the houses that I grew up in. I just go and park outside or sit in a fire hydrant on a stoop or stay in a car or whatever and like write. And so some of the best things that I've written, the things that's gotten like the biggest reactions or just kind of go a different layer. That's probably what I've done. So the plan for this year is I'm going to go to Paris and write. And so I booked a trip for about a week with a hotel near the Eiffel. And I'm just going to go write. That's it. It's just I'm going to go. And I'm going to just crank it out. And the reason why I chose Paris, and this was a tough decision, right? Because, I mean, people that know me know that, like, I love, yo, I've been wanting to go to Brazil for a long time. People know I love Brazil. I've been wanting to go to Brazil for so long, and I've been to Baby Brazil, which is Dominican Republic. I call it the DR Baby Brazil, but it ain't Brazil. It is not. And so there's a few reasons why I didn't choose Brazil. One is that Zika stuff is for real, B. Them mosquitoes is and got babies coming out with three legs and stuff. I don't know. That Zika stuff is trippy. So y'all, CDC, y'all need to get that under control before I go anywhere near that. I mean, I know I don't want to have kids, but I may change my mind at some point. I don't know, but that's wild. And two, you know, I think most of the Zika thing. It's mostly the Zika thing, but and I know Brazil has a really rich history, but I think Paris just has this history of writers, of black writers that have gone there and just cranked it out. So if you read, like, I mean, Baldwin went to Paris to go, and he went there and spent a lot of time there and wrote there. And I know Hughes went and wrote there, and Coates, he talks about that a lot in his book. And it's just like, you know, in the, not Coates, but some of these other folks that I was writing back in the day, you know, when things was real, real rough out here for black folks, in America, you know, a refuge for them was Paris. And it's just a lot of history there, a lot of us there. And so I wanted to be able to walk those same streets and you know, and the caliber of writer that has done this little pilgrimage or whatever. I mean, let me be clear. These brothers and sisters, some women that's gone out there and done some dope stuff too. I mean, let me be clear. These cats will write circles around me, right? But I mean, there is something about that energy, being in that and being like real focused. Like, I just been working on my focus. Like, when I say I want to get to greatness, and as we talk about Muhammad Ali, you know, somebody who had no problem telling you he was great. When we talk about that, like, that's where I've been just focused on and get my and just getting in the zone to be great. Like, what does it mean to be great? What does greatness look like? Like, how do I get the glow like Bruce Leroy in The Last Dragon, right? Like, I'm trying to get the glow, son. Like, and there are some people, like, that aura is just around them. And so that's the goal. And you may never get there. I may never get there, but it's to strive for that. And so the reason why I'm writing, and these stories are, you know, partially parts of my life and not, but I just still don't see, and I have not seen me completely and totally reflected in writing and in pop culture. And not to say there aren't folks that have gotten close, but the only way I'm gonna get to see that true representation is to invade that, right? And so, I mean, when you look at my career trajectory, that's how I really got into all of my profession. So, you know, being a social worker, I actually got introduced to the agency that I would become a social worker for through a girl I was dating at the time, and she was working with special needs kids. And I got into that work just to get some extra money while I was in school, and I realized I was really good at it, and so good that they wanted me to become a social worker, and I really didn't want to. And then I looked at the profession, and I looked at the lack of black men versus how many folks we serve being black. And then I could see myself in those kids, and then it was more of a sense of duty, right? My original trajectory was to be a lawyer. So I went into school and I did poli sci with a law option with a minor in communications. And it's funny, I didn't finish the minor in communications. It's funny that I do a lot of like communication stuff now. But I had like spent time with lawyers and did some internships and things like that. But I do feel like God made that left turn and was like, nah, this is where you going. And it's funny because I had friends at the time that was just like, bro, you just don't ever plan on making no money, do you? Right? And so it's funny. The money thing about being a social worker, I mean, much like being a teacher or being, any of these kind of social service type of jobs, I'm pouring me more. I need something. I have to drink something while I'm talking to y'all. I don't want to be parched. And so, but like these folks, like they get into this work and it's like the money thing is a real conversation. So when you think about it, it's hard for, I think, minority folks that come from like the hood, especially folks that's the first in their family to go to college and all that good stuff. Like, it's hard for them to make those type of decisions, because part of the reason why you went to school and spent all this money and hustled and grinded and went through everything you went through is so you can make decent money. So it's hard when you the first one and you expect that person to be a teacher or a social worker or be in ministry or whatever, right? And so that was a real issue. That was interesting, right? But I did my time. I did 5 years of that, and then I got into the space of working with young people, and it's because I saw folks doing work with young people, but I didn't think that they always represented where we came from. Like, I felt like I understood those kids in a different way, and I got in there in the same way as being a social worker, where I did it my way. I did the same thing at this youth org, and I mean, there was a way they had of doing things, and you know, I was blessed to have a boss and a CEO that trusted me and let me kind of have the wheels to that car. He told me, like, look, man, I'll block and tackle for you. You just got to get the touchdowns. And, you know, that was the best thing he could have said to me, because he allowed me to, like, run that program the way that I saw fit. And our numbers went up. And that became the model that we would use. And I would eventually, you know, be in charge of the program in Oakland and SF, the program side of things. And then, you know, working to help bring in teachers and support teachers and all that good stuff. And even though I had not been a teacher, but having success in our schools and with kids that weren't necessarily doing well. And so, you know, got into that thing and got to do that my way as well. And so, you know, now working at the school district and trying to engage with people in a different way and kind of change things. And I've been able to do that in every profession, and working to be able to do that here, and we'll see what happens. You know, so far I'm batting a pretty decent average, but we'll see. And so how this relates to writing is, I got into writing because I never really saw my story, me being like represented in that. And so, I mean, yeah, I can vibe with Coates, and that brother can write his butt off, and I can vibe with Baldwin, who's like super deep and dope. And I think that there are people that really, really feel Baldwin, and it's just some things I just can't relate to him on, right? And so I wanted to create that lane. So, you know, when I do go to Paris, it's going to be some of the most personal writing that I've ever done. And like, trying to finish up these books. And so one, I've mentioned it before, it's a conversation with me and two of my friends. And it's based off of, I mean, a lot of these conversations happen. A lot of them are what probably would have been said by us, had we had the chance to continue to have these conversations. One of the folks represented in that is no longer with us. Is one of our best friends, and so just to kind of honor that memory, I mean, that's gonna be a real one. That's gonna be a tough one to get through and to get done. I've started and stopped doing that one for a while. I would say this last week, I've written about, you know, 4,000 or 5,000 words on that. So just pushing forward, right? And then the other one is I think the other one's gonna be pretty powerful too. That one is called Crack Baby Residue. And but I think both of those, I don't know if I'm gonna do them in book form or essay form, but they won't just be articles. The plan is to even if I like do those on my own, It's to like sell those, like make sure those are some official credits that I have on my name. Even if I don't care if nobody buy it, I just want to like have those official credits. It'll be books published with the bulk of writing coming from this trip to Paris in a few weeks. And so, you know, I think that that's you know, when we talk about like when I reflect on just where you know, where you started at and where you are and all that stuff. I think that those are stories that are important for folks. I remember reading those type of stories, which were very few and far between, but when I did, they had an impact. Which leads me into, when we talk about impact, I think that leads me into my talk on education, right? And so I spent a little time talking about education last time, and I think it's something, like I said, that I'm going to keep adding a section on, because it's where the bulk of my life is spent. I mean, these 15, 16-hour days is all around education and educating kids and just what that means for folks. So the latest controversy. So basically, there's this whole controversy around charter schools and traditional public schools and all that stuff. I am agnostic. I've said this. I don't care. Like, as long as kids, especially black kids, are learning, whatever mode that needs to be, I'm down for that. I'm not concerned with that. So, like, I think if a charter school is dope, then let it be dope. If a traditional public school is dope, then let it be dope. If there are traditional public schools that ain't serving kids, then changes need to happen, or that school needs to not be there. If there are charter schools that's not serving kids well, then changes need to happen, or just need not be there. I'm not out here caping for charter schools. Like, I don't, you know what I'm saying? And again, since, you know, like I said, I have a lot of white friends. Thank you. I appreciate all the support. They don't know what I mean when I say caping. Caping means like there was a long time ago, there was a song by E-40 called Captain. Well, okay, that's not really helping you. Like, I'm not out here to save, to speak on behalf of these charter schools or whatnot, right? Like, I work in traditional public education. But the point is like, I don't hate that institution. And there's a lot of people here that hate that institution. So the latest thing here in Oakland, there's been a lot of like uproar around common enrollment. And basically what common enrollment is it's going to be one application that parents would have to fill out around where they want to send their child to school. And in this common enrollment structure, they would be able to mark both charter schools and traditional public schools. And so folks that hate charters hate this idea. They just think that that's going to lead charters to take over our traditional public schools and all this, and this gloom and doom and this privatization, this, that, and the third, right? And so there's a few things that I ask about that, right? So there's something that I was writing on it. I don't know if I'm going to get it published or not, but there's just some questions that I have for that, right? Like, take me to a place. Let's just say you got a magical, beautiful, shiny time machine. Take me to a place where black kids are just being educated just really, really, really well. I'll wait, send it to me, let me know. You may have to go back before Brown versus Board. The point is, time machines and black folks don't really mix, because it ain't too many times in modern history where we was just doing real, real well. I'm just saying. So that's one thing, right? Like, there's just this narrative that folks are tend to push that education just got bad for black folks because the charters and big money, and I just can't let you ride with that. That's just not true. Like, the one thing about working in the city that you grew up in is when people try to act like, well, in 95 these schools was great, you'd be like, no, nah, bruh, it wasn't. It really wasn't. And so that's one thing that I asked about. Two, you can still hate charter schools and have common enrollment be a thing. Because here's the thing. Anything that's going to make it easier for parents, especially black parents, especially folks in poverty, to get all their information in one place, fill out one application, and make a decision, and then a child would not be holding up multiple spots in schools and taking spots from other people. Like, I'm for it. I am for giving people options and choices. And I do think that, like, you get to use that data and improve your system. So, for instance, if there was some kind of mass exodus, which there already has been, there's already 11,000 kids that have left our traditional public school system and chosen charters, and another 17,000 that have chosen neither. They've not chosen our TPS schools. TPS means traditional public schools, or our charter schools. They've taken them kids out of our Oakland system altogether. Like, this thing is already happening. Like, we have to do better. We have to build schools that attract people. Listen, man, your child is worth being competed over. I've said this before. When LeBron James came into the league, or Steph Curry, or whomever you want to use, Nike, Reebok, and Adidas came to those boys and made their best play ever. They said, here's our portfolio. Here's what we want to do. They competed. They gave them the best package. And then those athletes chose the things that was best for them and their family. If you are a white person with means, you have options. I just did a meeting in Hillcrest. That's in the Oakland Hills here in Oakland. It's a really rich area, right? And what those people are choosing is between the neighborhood elementary school there and private schools. But they have a choice. Some are choosing the traditional school. Some are choosing the private schools. But they got a choice. So why when we get down to black folks and brown folks and poor people, that we just don't want you to have an option? And I'm saying this to somebody that works in traditional public schools, because I had that whack ass education. I had it. Like, I was here. I was here before big money and all that stuff that people saying, and all this privatization stuff. Like, but I want the opportunity to build schools and improve our schools. Like, let me compete. I play ball. Like, I want to compete. I want to go up against the best. I do. And there are some of our schools that are doing that, man. We got some dope schools. Like, we got some schools that's struggling in Oakland, but we got some dope schools that's doing some dope stuff. Like, I'm watching Frick Middle School go through its redesign process, and just the stuff that they're doing, just the things that they're talking about launching next year. Like, I've never heard people be like, yo, I just really want to send my kid to Frick. I'm excited about that until this year. I'm not saying that didn't exist, but I am seeing a new type of energy around that school. Like, that staff and that leader is like, let's do it. Let's build something. Like, Parker Elementary, which is like smack dab in the hood, man, got a dope leader that's like, is unfazed by it. It's just like, yo, I'm about to teach kids because that's what I do. And people will send their kids across the city to go into the hood to his school. So I just don't buy that. I just think that, like, I think it's disrespectful. And that brings us to my third thing. It's like, we don't trust our people. Like, when you tell me you don't want those folks to have all the information and be able to make their choice, you don't trust them to make the right decision for themselves and them and their families. And that's disrespectful, yo. Like, that's just how I see it. I just see it as disrespectful. I think it's mad disrespectful. I think that it's saying, like, yo, well, you making a decision, but you don't have all it. You know, it's like patting them on the head. It's like, oh, well, that charter school, you know, they lied to you and tricked you and got you to go. Like, give our people the benefit of the doubt, man. Give people information and let them make their own choice. If you worried about those schools taking over, you obviously worried about it for a reason. Listen, man, I ain't got kids. We've covered this. We've talked about this. If I have kids, I don't know. Whatever. That's a different podcast. But check this out. If I did, I wish you would try to take away my options and my choice. I wish you would. I wish you would. So why would I allow that? And why would I condone that for that to happen to people that look like me? Like, I don't get that. And I also think that it gives us a window into why people are making the decisions that they're making. Like, with that type of system, you can ask questions. You can ask them why they chose school A over school B. You can ask that question. Like, I just feel like I mean, I don't know, man. I just feel like it's a lot of folks trying to make decisions for other folks. And I think both sides would probably be able to say that or whatever, but I'm on the side of kids, man. I don't, because here's the thing. You can still hate your charter, you can still hate charter schools, and common enrollment can still be a thing. I don't care if you can go out and you can campaign against them schools. You can try to get in front of people at churches and all that stuff and try to like pump them to go to the other school. That I can't stop you from doing that. Do that. Whatever. That's how you want to spend your time. You go right ahead doing that. I have better things to do, but you go ahead and you do that. But the apparatus needs to be set up for these folks to make a decision, not to have to jump through extra hoops because they want to like try to get their kid some different looks. Come on now. We should be past that. And so I've seen a lot of folks get like attacked, and I haven't really been attacked for the thoughts and views that I have. I mean, I think me being from Oakland helps out with that. I think I tend to be really respectful of folks. I don't have a problem with people expressing how they feel on those things, and I generally respect folks. But let me be real clear, because I have seen bouts of disrespect. Like, I'm just not that dude. Listen, man, I'm not the guy whose face you're gonna get in and yell at. Like, I'm not that. I have a problem with like white folks calling black people racist or the new Jim Crow or whatever it is that they feel empowered to do. I personally have a problem with that. If you doing that with somebody and they letting you do it, more power to y'all. I'm just letting you know that I'm not that dude. I'm a free black man out in these streets, yo. Let me tell you what that means. That means while I love my job and while I love what I do, I'm a man first. I won't disrespect you, and I won't tolerate folks disrespecting me, because I done seen it, man. I done seen some stuff. But, you know, it is what it is. At any rate, man, I'm going to get y'all out of here on time. I said, I promised it would be less than 30 minutes. We are 28 right now. So, Muhammad Ali, RIP, man. Thank you for all that you've done. Thank you for the shot of courage and self-esteem that you've put in our people. You will be missed, but I'm glad you get to rest easy. For the rest of you all, take care of yourselves and each other. I will see y'all next time. Peace. And you can't see my eyes unless my head is bent. You dig? We fly, no lie. You know this. Swollen. Falling right outside. It's like showbiz. Bumpies, they fly. Driving my garage, stay sky high, fly with the stars, G4 flights, 80 grand large. So we lean with it, pop with it, vertical Jones, mean with the top missing. I'm sitting clean with the bottom kitted. I hopped out, saggy jeans and my rock glisten. But I spent about 8 grand, mommy on stage, doing the ring dance.